For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So on auspicious day, that's been celebrated for probably well over 1,000 years in Japan, Buddha's birthday, sometimes called flower holiday or something like that, Hana Matsuri. And as people might know, we're entering the third week of our intensive practice commitment period, where some of us are following a more intensive personal schedule of zazen, of dharma study, and of sangha connection. So even if you're not, as I've said many times, you're along for the ride on the PCP train, which is practice commitment period, not the other thing. Someday I'll just drop the commitment and put practice commitment period. But you know, it's a time of commitment and energy to practice. And spring is this time of a renewal and a focus and a burgeoning of energy. And your commitment to practice is basically up to you. Most people have offered a commitment sheet which specifies their schedule, but some have not, and they just make up their own commitments. Once in a while, let me know what's going on, but it's okay. So the first 2 weeks we focused on the teachings of Joko Beck, who is actually not in our direct lineage from Suzuki Roshi, but is close, and also maybe one of the most significant teachers of the 20th, let's say late 20th, earliest 21st century. And it seems appropriate that for this spring morning, we can open up the teachings of Blanche Hartman. Blanche, sitting zazen, looks like at City Center. So Blanche Hartman, her name, Shunpo Zenkei, means spring full moon. So very appropriate for us, inconceivable joy. So I know some people found Joko's teachings a little bit rough, but we'll have some inconceivable joy with Blanche. Blanche was born 1926 in May and died in 2016. And many of us, including Taigen, who's not here, but some of us may have practiced with Blanche. Who's practiced with Blanche? Haitian? Me? Taigen? Anyone else online? So Blanche was abbess of San Francisco Zen Center. I think she was the first female abbot. And she lived and pretty much died for a lot of her life at San Francisco Zen Center, and in particular in City Center. I believe she and her husband lived in the apartment that Suzuki Roshi and his wife lived in. And Blanche was famous for teaching sewing, called Nyohoe, or sewing clothing, Buddha's robes, according to the Dharma. And she carried that tradition. But she's kind of amazing for many, many things, including her complete devotion to the community. You know, she lived in a building full of Zen students, knocking on her door, talking to her, asking for things constantly. And always seemed to respond. I showed up one time to sew my okesa for my priest ordination 20 years ago. And Blanche invited me to spend, you know, a week with her, just getting started. And I show up and she's like, "Oh, do you have your fabric?" I'm like, "Oops, nope, I don't have any fabric." And she's like, "Oh, well, we're out of it here. Let's get going." So she jumps in her Honda vehicle, backs out without looking behind her, all the way out in this very crowded basement garage in the city center on Page Street. And she's like probably 70 at the time, and zooms off to downtown San Francisco and says, "Wait in the car." Double parks, like, "Wait in the car and I'm going to get you some fabric." I'm like, So this is just how Blanche was. I said to my teacher, I said, "Tell me about Blanche." You know, he lived at City Center 30 years, so he knew Blanche pretty well. He said, I never heard such words out of his mouth. "Oh, Blanche? She's a saint." That was about it. I don't think I need to say anything else. And there's so much people can say. But it was interesting because I read in the preface to her book, Seeds for a Boundless Life, which was compiled by her student, Zenju. Norman Fisher wrote a beautiful introduction, which said something like, Blanche was like a saint. And Norman's Jewish. So, I mean, there's something where, like, you know, and Blanche was almost invisible, lacked any pretension, which I'll talk about later, and was quietly devoted to promoting women and people on the margins, like people of color or LGBTQ people. She was, almost every student she had, I would say, was kind of an amazing person. Her student, Barbara Cohn, also known as another old crone, I think that's how they would talk to each other, was a founder of Austin Zen Center. Kosho McCall was her student, a queer man who'd been an Episcopal priest. Ryuman, who now has a center in Western Massachusetts, who actually turned me on to, when I say good evening, good morning, hello, bodhisattvas, I first heard Ryuman, who is a person, a queer person of color. Also, I heard her say that. She'd say, "Bodhisattvas, you know, we're at the city for work period. Come on, bodhisattvas." And I thought, oh, that's really great. Everybody's a bodhisattva. I think I'll try that out. So, and Ryuman also wrote one of, I think maybe like first edited volume of Dharma for Soto Zen in of sexuality, race, and gender. So interesting students. Her student, Jana Draka, had basically a homeless mobile zendo. She was on the streets of San Francisco with a whole sangha of, quote, homeless at the time, unhoused people, caring for them, living basically with them at times. And it was really pretty amazing. Also, Tony Patchell, who actually happens to be the husband of someone we'll study, Darlene Cohn, Darlene Cohen was married to Tony, and Tony was a social worker, also a street social worker, and worked with street youth in San Francisco, in like, you know, the Tenderloin and some of those places that people, when they go to San Francisco, they're like, oh, there's people there who look really scary to me. You know, they're on drugs or they are homeless youth. And, you know, people want this pristine. But these people, like Jonna and Tony, went right into those realms. Amazingly so. I could go on, but our very own Neozon sister, Lian Shut, was also Dharma transmitted from Blanche, as is Joan Amaral at Zen Center of North Shore. And finally, her last era was Zenju Earthland Manual, who many of you studied in Friday morning, decolonizing consciousness. So in the time I practiced at San Francisco Zen Center, this was sort of, all those people were just Zen students like me, pretty much. We're all, and all congregating and circling Blanche. So I just tell these stories. You know, we tell the story of the Buddha pointing to the ground and the sky. Sort of, I told that story many times during Rohatsu. We tell this story, but this is time for us to hear the story of Blanche Hartman, who also stood up with ease and confidence almost invisibly. She wasn't quite as cheeky as the baby Buddha, but she knew her way and where to put her energy and how to stand up for everyone and inclusivity. You could say a pioneer in that realm. By the way, Blanche came to practice in her 40s after having four children who were at least adolescent by the time she was practicing. So I'll just read some things from Blanche on the effort of daffodils. So this is from this book, Seeds for a Boundless Life. And she talks about a great teacher who was Suzuki Roshi's assistant at San Francisco Zen Center, called Katagiri Roshi, sensei at the time. And she said, in the course of her time with him, he said something like, we sit, we meditate to settle the self on the self and let the flower of our life force bloom. So we have all these flowers around us, you know, in this sendo today. But if you think of your life as this flower blooming constantly, and Blanche said, that was another one of those moments that have deeply moved me, and it has stayed with me forever. And you could see that in Blanche. So when the servers go around, you can place your hands in gassho if you would like more of something. So I could feel with Blanche, although it was only recently I read these words, that they inspired her. You could see how she was concerned and devoted to the blooming of everyone and everything, even herself. And she says, how do we let the flower of this life force bloom if there's nothing to gain from Zen practice? If this is it, our life as it is, and there's nothing to get, and we are completely as we are, where does effort come from if there's no goal? What is the purpose? And she, like many venerable Zen masters, answers herself, it comes from the one who requires it. sort of like, she says, what is the effort that daffodils make in order to bloom? There they are, bulbs under the ground in the dark. They're doing something. Something is happening there under the ground in the dark that results in the bloom that we see when we walk down the path. What kind of effort is this that we make to allow blooming to be completely itself and with which we meet the whole world and appreciate this opportunity to be who we are? So, you know, the way we move in the Zendo, our wonderful, sometimes impatient Shuso. This is...
all the time.
Didn't mean to insult you by minimizing your lack of patience. All of this is our life force blooming. How we hold our... what's that thing you have on your head? This halo? Claire, how we hold our halo. See, this is your life force blooming. Right on the tip there, there's like a little flower. See? Or is it a flower? What is that thing?
Well, there's a flower that attaches it.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. So Claire knows. We all know in some ways how to bloom. That it's really all there. And so this is this great encouragement from Blanche. She goes on and says things like, the work of the daffodil preparing to bloom is very quiet. Shh, you can't even hear it. It doesn't look outward to see if it's doing it right. Like when Claire put on her headband, you just put it on. You weren't like going, am I doing this right? It should, is somebody looking at me? You were just like a natural flower blooming. And this is, you know, how Chris is serving, how our techno is taking care of things, wondering what's Hogetsu doing with that mic or not doing with it. All of this is this effort of preparing to bloom. So Blanche says, it doesn't look outward to see if it's doing it right. It finds the bloom within itself somehow. It comes from the very nature of the bulb. You could say we call that Buddha nature, but what is the nature of a bulb? Do you ever look at a bulb? I have an amaryllis. Somebody gave me an amaryllis that's encased in wax, the bulb. You know, you can see me. I'm like, why do that to an amaryllis? Put wax all around it. But it produces this beautiful flower. And now I'm like cutting the wax off of it and hoping to liberate it, to be free. But still, it didn't care. It was just blooming, even in this covering of wax, in this coating. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty quiet too, but it burst forth so you could see its voice and its bloom maybe. And if you look closely enough, even in the darkness of that wax covering, it's quietly telling us something. Quietly inside of us, this Buddha nature is whispering, or maybe like a breeze just flowing. So, you know, Joko Beck was like, look at yourself. But at some point when you really look at yourself, you know, this is her later stages, end stage bodhisattva practice, is this, you can feel, taste, touch, hear, manifest this bloom energy, the nature, that this bloom we see is beautiful. It's beautiful from the beginning, before it appears, says Blanche. It's completely there. It just needs the conditions to help it bloom. But it's really all there. It's all completely present, right with you from the beginning. And then Blanche says these words, this is our faith. In faith that we are Buddha, that we are awakened, we enter Buddha's way. In faith that we can bloom fully in the most appropriate way, we practice this practice. So this spring practice period, I have this like carving with acorns on it. I only whip this out for special occasions. I think it's a hazelnut tree. That is appropriate. So this spring practice period, let's celebrate this return of energy. Let's encourage each other to renew the vitality with the energy of a daffodil. You hear the birds too, with the energy of birds. I bet Lou knows what those birds are. Do you? Can you share that with us?
That's a northern cardinal.
Uh-huh. Thank you. And Lou's also going to be offering a nature walk with birding involved. No experience required, but we'll talk about that later. So with this vitality of the daffodil, we can bloom. And if we're lucky, we find a way to show up in our lives with everyone and everything to affirm and verify the beautiful wholeness. So thank you all very much. And we can enjoy our treats and conversation. So wonderful to see everyone. And please speak away if you wish.
And we can pass around this microphone for whoever wishes to share.
How was it to be the Buddha? Yeah. Jake?
I thought it was a very nice ritual. And just one of these days I'll learn the chant. But I wanted to touch briefly on what you were saying about Blanche's teachings, and mm-hmm. it really seems to resonate with reflecting your most authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's everything is there, and everything is already what it's supposed to be, and the conditions will find themselves when they do. And I so often run into people that are trying to present themselves as something else, mm. or they're hiding something.
Mm.
And yeah. I think that these sorts of teachings just remind us to be true to ourselves, not just for our benefit, but for the benefit of everyone we interact with.
Thank you. Yeah. It's interesting, right? Like, even though we're all just great, there's still a hard time accepting that sometimes. And you can see what happens when we don't. So Blanche says it does take some effort, which, you know, each stitch, I'll say more about sewing with her, but, you know, you'd be like, Blanche, what do you think of this stitch? You know, like, I'm doing a good job, right? You know, it's not like I'd show my bad stitches and go, look at this terrible stitch. Actually, I did with her, but that's another story. But everyone looked beautiful to her, you know. But she was constantly encouraging everyone and could hold this space for this practice of everyone. So many stories. But Blanche didn't hide. She didn't hide. She let people hide if they needed to, but she was always there. Anything else? Online, bodhisattvas. Ah, Maria.
How can one help another person who's resisting manifesting their own energy? Mm-hmm. Like they can't accept with what they're experiencing.
Like who they are? Mm-hmm. Who they are? They can't accept what they're experiencing,
yeah.
Or they can't accept...
It's another person rather than like her own person.
By shining your own authentic self and allowing them to have the space to struggle. Sometimes people need to do that. It's like a baby, you know. Watch babies when they're learning how to walk. It's a, you know, they've got to fall a little bit. You don't want to be too far from them. But you've got to let them do their own thing. So, yeah, great question. Maybe by not wanting them to be different than who they are.
Could you repeat that? It was hard to hear from the...
Okay. We need to keep passing that mic around. And there's in the back there. Is that Serena back there? Come on down.
Hi.
I
was hoping you could talk a little bit about this baby metaphor, because we know that Buddha became a Buddha later in life, and not to be a hair splitter, but can you talk about this metaphor and when the baby ceremony came into Buddhism? Do you know anything about that?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'll be happy to split a few hairs on that. Because you're like, what? This baby's enlightened, but then Buddha got enlightened under the tree 30-some years later, you know? So, of course, we're making all this up, right? But, you know, think about this, actually. Buddha was born, apparently, and, you know, you don't have to believe this. I don't think I do. But there was multiple lifetimes of practice before this arrival as this little infant in India. And still, this baby, even though babies kind of know what they need right from the beginning, and they kind of know who they are as little nuggets, you know, they cry when they need something and, you know, react to conditions. But this baby Buddha, you know, stood up and did these miraculous things. So this is all made up, right? But then had to grow up. Still, even though completely got it, still had to practice some more and very hard before even this wonderful Buddha being really fully lived. And let's say, reached the pinnacle of 24/7 awakened life without any regression. That's the story. So that was the Buddha's awakening under the Bodhi tree. But it took a while to realize it. And of course, Buddha had to keep walking around, talking to people, realizing it too. Was there another follow-up to that, Serena? Could split a few more hairs. When did the ceremony start?
So yes, I understand that he's celebrated because he became the Buddha, but when did the mythology about what happened, walking on lotuses, mm-hmm. and everything, when did that emerge in the in our lineage, that it became part of... I appreciate celebrating Buddha's birthday very much, because it's kind of like, oh, it's like Christmas for Buddhists. That's
Easter.
Nice. I like that, because I'm not
Easter.
Really super into some of the other holidays. So that's nice, but when there's like different mythology added to it that is, we know nobody at that time he was, I think he was birthed as a C-section, right, from his mother. Maybe his mother died in childbirth.
A miraculous C-section without any incision or blood.
But did she not die in childbirth?
Nope, after, but probably.
Oh, okay.
You know, conveniently,
and yeah, so there's
like
these other things
many
that we
women.
Also know. And so, I don't know. I guess I have problems with the decorating an event that maybe happened like other births, and where babies don't stand up and walk, and when babies don't walk on lotuses when they're first born. So yeah, I have problems with it. And although I really appreciate celebrating his birth, I like pouring water on the little statue and the flowers. I like it, but I'm having difficulties with the mythology, like not knowing when that arose and what that was. Yes, it's, I understand it's a metaphor, but like, to connect that metaphor to the, to how, because every religion has an origin or origin story in a way, but like, yeah, to like, when was that added to Buddhism as like an important part of the Buddhist?
You know, yeah, I don't know the exact date it was added, and it was added in different ways at different times and elaborated. So there are records of early stories, including records in stone of Buddha's mom, Queen Maya, a tree branch, holding onto a tree branch, and like a baby popping out, like boop, and then doing the seven steps. So it must have been pretty early on in India. And this ceremony, I think, started maybe 600-700s in Japan, this flower ceremony. So, and in many of the Buddhist writings, there are early versions and some more elaborate ones in what's called the Mahayana, or let's say newer school of Buddhism. So people kept making up more and more stories about the stories. Oh, Patrick, hey.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I really appreciated the symbolism of the ceremony, and I thought it was beautiful, and that the audio quality is great. So I think the microphones are awesome.
Oh, thank you, Patrick.
No problem.
And yeah, and I'm glad that the ceremony could be seen. You know, it's so hard to do this hybrid ceremony stuff, so thank you. And one thing about the symbolism, I wondered, could you say a little bit about what in the symbolism struck you?
Just the, you know, giving the flower and bathing the Buddha. That was just, I don't know, it was just very, it was very fresh and not something I've seen before. And it was very interesting.
Thanks. And in some ways, at its core, the symbolism is not just bathing the baby Buddha, but this is also honoring the awakening that we all have moment by moment, who we really are, our essential nature, and watering the seeds of our own compassion and deep wisdom that is no different than what we call the Buddha. So it is a little ritualistic, but also in tune with the season. David Weiner.
Okay. I just wanted to address what the, I didn't know who was, but talking about the mythology. In my studies at Loyola, and we talked a lot about ritual, and it happens in all religions, and it's not just in Buddhism, of course, but ritual is a way of people trying to comprehend something they cannot comprehend. It's a way of trying to take something that is so ethereal and spiritual and give it some reality so they can hold on to it. And so the mythology about him taking seven steps as an infant is just a way of saying, honoring him and making it more realistic for people in their ordinary life. And, you know, there's all kinds of myths in Judaism and in Christianity. If you read the Bible and all the different stories that happen, is it real? I don't know. some of the things that happen. And so it's a way of us trying to find a way as ordinary people to connect to something that we think is beyond us, mm. you know, to the divine in a way. And what it is, this is a way for people to say, ah, I can take safe harbor in this. Mm. And it's a way of finding safe harbor, so to speak. And is it real? It doesn't matter. It's the sense of safe harbor that's important, mm-hmm. and it gives life to it. So it's just a comment on the aspect of mythology and ritual. And like I say, it spans all religions, all spiritual mm-hmm. practices. Mm-hmm. There's always some form to make it real. So that's my comment, but thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much, David. I was thinking yesterday, I don't know about a spiritual ritual, but there was a ritual of taking to the streets in the service of democracy and of truth, dare we say. And several of us participated in this with signs and voices and bodies. So I think this kind of coming together as a community to touch what's core and meaningful and share that is not limited to Buddhism. But yeah. We do things that seem kind of crazy or weird, but somehow they help us. And if they don't, eventually we'll stop doing them. That's my sense. So... Leo Bodhisattva.
What is the name of the teacher we are going to be studying this?
Blanche Hartman.
Hartman. Mm-hmm. I have been taking care of plants for the past year, and it's kind of like really great to see how they tell you what they need. And when you provide them what they need, they actually bloom and they look pretty healthy. And what you shared today about kind of like this kindness and cultivating this greatness or the kindness within you feels the same as kind of like raising a plant. Mm. And also, I feel like... like sometimes when I come here and let's say we chant something that is kind of like difficult for me to understand, I find myself gravitating towards specific words that they change like how I feel in this particular moment. Mm. And I feel like they cultivate this kind of like kindness that almost I have this image of those flowers coming through the cement. Mm. And I feel like with Jocko Beck, it was kind of like, you are the cement and you are delusional and you have to practice. And if you don't practice, you're more delusional. And we thought this kind of like new teaching for me resonates more because, okay, I understand like I have to grind and, you know, or not. And the reason I come here or many people, it's kind of like, how do I create the conditions for the plants or the flowers kind of like to come out versus grinding into detaching myself from any delusion? So,
thank you. Yeah, I would say also that Joko is teaching us how to break through the cement.
Oh, mm-hmm.
By being the cement, by completely being the cement. But it's tough. And this is what I mean is you almost like breathe more easily with Blanche, right? She's a little more subtle. We've got some people online. I think Ruben wants to say something and then maybe Aishan. Did you have a golden hand or did I see that?
No, I did.
I did, but hey, let's see what comes out of my mouth. I'm really grateful we're talking about Blanche. even though I never met her. I you know that I grew up in her lineage, and I'm really, really, really grateful for the straightforward, incredibly clean, non-mystical, just like grounded in. It's hard to say. There's something about her story, the protesting, and you know this sense of righteousness, and then looking in the oppressor's eye and being like, "Oh, we're the same." Mm-hmm. And then now what? Right? and the answer, as I understand it, was, you know, to practice and to take care of the world. And I'm like, thank you.
Thank you, Ruben. Ruben's also referring to a story in the Seeds for a Boundless Life, which Blanche has told many times in a variety of places, about how she was like super activist. I think they were kind of like communists, you know, like in the era when people were that and were, you know, persecuted for being that in our culture. So her husband lost his job, I believe, because of his advocacy. But she was protesting and she kind of came face to face with an angry person on the opposite side and saw a sense of wholeness. And this just spurred her to practice. Other things did too, but it's a wonderful thing. So thank you for raising that up, Ruben. Asian Bodhisattva.
Thank you. Do I have to press anything on this magical talisman? I think it just works automatically.
Just, okay.
I feel like I should bow to it.
We
remembered or recollected at our celebration of Buddha's awakening in December during Rohatsu, the statement by Shakyamuni Buddha that, you know, how wonderful, I and all beings, you know, are endowed with Buddha nature, but because of their conditioning, some beings cannot see it. And I think this relates very much to the statement by the little baby Buddha of, you know, I alone am the world honored one. I think I once said on a Buddha's birthday ceremony that's actually what all babies are saying when they come into the world. But we don't speak their language necessarily because we've been, you know, conditioned into a different language. And as we mature, we have to learn a lot of things about how to be a human being in our culture. And some of those things are helpful and some of them have some real strings attached. And where am I going with this? But I think that this is, you know, kind of Buddha before the conditioning of childhood that we ultimately, you know, maybe need to see through some of the conditioning that we've experienced in life that isn't so helpful, that doesn't allow us to bring forth the flower of our Buddha nature. And to look at that and see, you know, is there any of that we can let go so that we can be, you know, maybe move into a place where we are just naturally more able to be a bright light and help other people and be joyful and all the things that Buddha promises. So that's, I think, why I like remembering, you know, what Buddha said right at the outset, which possibly we all said too.
Thank you, Aichen.
And now I will bring the magical talisman back to its source.
If you can see Aichen cradling the microphone, the precious microphone, who Simone procured and set up, and we're learning to work with this new thing, which is great.
And I believe Artenzo is coming around to collect teacups and whatnot, signaling the end of our program, which I think is maybe this is a good time for us to stop and continue and go forth and enjoy the energy of spring and our capacity to flower and bloom together. So thank you all very much. Maybe I'll just wait to chant the vows. Or maybe we could do some announcements while...